get started with round two of fractional quantum Hall effect. So here's the outline of my talk. I would like to start with a somewhat longer introduction, basically to tell you a little bit about old history in this field, which is going to be 30 years old next year, and then tell you, in my opinion, what are some important recent developments. And then I will advertise this thing which I call the tunability of the effective interactions, and I will show why it can be useful in to probe the physics of the quantum Hall effect. And then I will focus on a specific example of that tunability in wide quantum wells, where we have the mixing of subbands and Landau levels, and I will show that this can actually be very useful to give us a hint of how the particle Hall symmetry is broken between the Murid Pfaffian and anti-Pfaffian states. So this was something that recently got a lot of attention. Okay, so I guess I don't really need to go into a lot of detail, thanks to Titus, about the basic physics, but this is the fundamental experiment that we do. So we take two-dimensional electron gas, we put it in a magnetic field, we drive the current, and then we measure voltage drops along that current and perpendicular to the current. So that's the quantum Hall experiment. And when you do that, and you plot the corresponding resistances, you see this beautiful figure, where in the perpendicular resistance, there is a series of very nice plateaus. And whenever we have the plateau in the perpendicular direction, we have the longitudinal resistance dropping down to zero. And this happens when there is a special ratio between the electron density and the magnetic field. So, okay, and there are of course many different fractions here, as you can see. Some of them are labeled by integer numbers, others are labeled by some simple fractions. And what I want to point out to you is also that the simplest fraction of all, which is 1/2, is missing in this case. So there's no plateau there. And we will see that that state is slightly different from others. So how do we understand this phenomenon? Well, let's start first from the zero magnetic field, where we have just some Fermi liquid. And then when we turn on the magnetic field, the kinetic energy is quenched. So we get a set of these highly degenerate Landau levels. And if the electron density is such that we can completely fill one or few of these Landau levels, then we get an insulating state with an energy gap, which is exactly this cyclotron energy. And that will give us a plateau like this nu equal one here. On the other hand, if we have electron density, which is not enough to completely fill a Landau level, we still see that we get some plateaus, but understanding them is very hard. However, what's really easy is to formally just write down the Hamiltonian that describes this system. And this is literally just what I wrote here. So it's a constant term. There is no kinetic energy in the problem. There is just this long-range Coulomb interaction. So how do you tackle this problem? And that's one of the nice things about the fractional quantum Hall effect is that it gave us completely new ways of looking at these things. Because if you see this interaction Hamiltonian, your first impulse would be to do some kind of diagrammatic theory or something like that. But what was actually shown by Laughlin is that it's much better to think in terms of the trial wave function. So really the first quantized quantum mechanics, not the second quantization.
So the simple looking Coulomb interaction has to be projected to lowest Landau level.
For example, that's the simplest case. That's the simplest case which works very well for many of these things. So what Laughlin suggested was to think in terms of trial many-body wave functions written in first quantized notation. So these wave functions typically have the form of some polynomial in n variables. So z is the electron coordinate in the plane written in this complex notation, times some exponential Gaussian factor, which is unimportant for our purpose. And we can motivate this wave function by thinking in terms of the one-body states, which in a circular gauge are just this z to the m, times, again, this unimportant exponential. And the Laughlin wave function in this kind of language is just this simple Jastrow polynomial, zi minus zj to the third. And this can generalize also to other filling factors written here, if, as suggested by Jane and then Halperin and Haldane. And the basic idea in all of this is that the electrons bind some number of vortices, and they become some composite particles, like composite fermions in this case. So why is fractional quantum Hall effect so exciting? It's because it's a very nice lab to probe topologically ordered systems, as emphasized by Wen. So what we have in the fractional quantum Hall effect, we have gapped many-body states that are degenerate on the torus, and they have fractionalized excitations, which are in this context called anions. So these anions, as you can see here, when I exchange the two of them, I can pick up some phase which is neither plus nor minus one, like for fermions or bosons, but it can be in general some complex number. And then this might have also applications in quantum computing. The theory behind all this is, at least the basic part of it, is the Chern-Simons field theory of composite bosons. So this theory consists of this gauge field A, and this is the Chern-Simons term, as you, I'm sure, well recognize. So this theory actually embodies this idea of attaching fluxes to particles. And it predicts, for example, the, you know, the statistics of these anions and how you braid them and all that. So these incompressible fluids that we study in the fractional quantum Hall effect also have chiral gapless modes at the edge, which are also very interesting. And then, as emphasized by Gerwin, McDonald, and Platzman, the projected density operators in the fractional quantum Hall effect satisfy this very interesting type of algebra. However, this has recently been emphasized by Haldane. This topological field theory is not really able to compute energetics, and it's important to supplement it with some new ideas. But this will not be the subject of today's talk. So what's really fascinating for me in this field is that the numerical approach can be extremely powerful. And by numerical approach, I mean exact diagonalization. The interesting thing about the quantum Hall effect, which distinguishes it from other systems, is that we have a richness of boundary conditions. For example, we can study the system on a disk, or maybe on a cylinder, or there is this particularly unique type of geometry, which is the spherical geometry, or we can just have fully periodic boundary conditions, which is then the torus geometry. And the recipe in all of this is you take this Hamiltonian, project it to a certain number of partially filled Lando levels, and the interaction in that case can be expanded in terms of these numbers, which are the Haldane pseudopotentials. And that Hamiltonian will give you a finite matrix that you can diagonalize, and we've developed all kinds of routines for all of these types of boundary conditions to do that. And when you do that, you can study, for example, model wave functions or Hamiltonians, compute the overlaps with Coulomb ground state. You can study entanglement spectrum, which was actually first introduced in this type of system. So here's the confession now that I would like to make. This is how I fell in love with doing all this. And that's the fact that even really, really tiny little systems of fractional quantum Hall droplets can give you a full insight into the thermodynamics. And the way to see that is just look at the Laughlin state for four particles. Okay, so just four particles, take four particles, you diagonalize it, and you plot the energy spectrum as a function of momentum. And this is what you get. You have a zero energy, you have a zero momentum featureless ground state. You have a beautiful collective mode, which is the Gerwin, McDonald, Platzman, Magneto-Roton mode. And this mode is gapped, and that gap is actually already converging very nicely to the value you get in thermodynamic limit. So essentially, you get a full interpretation of your thermodynamic limit in a ridiculously small finite system. So this is with the fully periodic boundary conditions, and the fact that I have so many energy levels here is because I'm using the fact that it's a liquid in the continuum, so I can continuously deform my unit cell. And by deforming the unit cell, I can scan basically a continuum of momenta. And then I get such a picture. Okay, so there has also been some analytical advances in this field, and those analytical advances came mainly through the use of conformal field theory, which is very powerful here because it gives us a way to introduce new trial wave functions as correlators of some fields in conformal field theory. This is not so important for this talk. And then also, there has been some analytical knowledge about the structure of these many-body wave functions and the fact that they can be related to a special class of polynomials, which are called the Jack polynomials, or this pattern of zeros that was introduced by Wen and Wang. And this is also a particularly interesting direction because recently it relates to this attempt to express these wave functions as matrix products. So these Jack polynomials that can be exactly related to the matrix product expansion. Okay, so now let's go back to the experiments and look at the exciting physics in higher Landau levels. So if I change now the filling factor and I go to a higher Landau level, then the particularly exciting thing is that there may be possibility for non-abelian states in the first excited Landau level, in particular for this filling factor 2 plus 1 half. Early on, it was suggested by Moore and Reed that this state can have a paired wave functions, which is called the Pfaffian wave function and given here. And this is the phase, which is an example of a non-abelian Ising phase. So you can see that plateau very nicely here. There are maybe even more exotic states like the Reed-Rezai states and so on. But I think it's fair to say by now that there is still not very much of theoretical understanding of the fractional corner Hall effect in higher Landau levels. And the main obstacles for that are the fact that there is Landau level mixing, which is stronger in the first excited Landau level. So that just means that you cannot really project anymore to a single partially filled Landau level. And there are also many compressible phases, such as stripes and bubbles, which are very close in the phase diagram to the incompressible states. However, for this filling factor, 2 plus 1 half, the overall evidence seems pretty solid that this is a non-abelian state, and I will show you some evidence for that later on. So here is my little personal summary of what are the latest developments in this field and what still remain as open problems. So first of all, we really need an experimental bulletproof that 5 half state is a non-abelian state, and this can only be done by interferometry measurements, interferometry experiments. And those are kind of tricky to do, so this is still lacking. Then there is the question of this particle hole symmetry breaking, so between Pfaffian and the so-called anti-Pfaffian state, and I will talk about this more later. Then there's again the question of these higher order non-abelian states, whether the real systems are really in those phases or not. There are interesting questions related to the edge physics, spin and multi-component physics. Then there is a whole new set of experiments that are concerned with the fractional corner Hall effect in graphene. And there we have some new hierarchies of states, which are at the moment not completely understood. It's also an interesting question whether we can have a paired state in graphene. So far, it hasn't been seen. Then there is this interesting development relating topology to quantum geometry in the quantum Hall effect, as Duncan emphasized. Then there's a set of experiments that indicate that there might be a coexistence of topological order and broken symmetry in Eisenstein's, Jim Eisenstein's group. This is also interesting. Then something that I'm currently interested in is how this quantum Hall effect fits into the general framework of strongly correlated systems. For example, how it relates to the Hubbard model or to these matrix product states or tensor networks and so on. And as we heard this morning, a particularly vivid aspect of this is also whether it can be realized in lattice systems without external magnetic field. Okay, so let me move on to this first real part of my talk, which is about the tunable interactions in quantum Hall effect. So how does one tune the interaction in these experiments on quantum Hall? Well, there are traditionally, there are two main ways to tune the interaction in gallium arsenide, which is by far the most studied experimental system. The first method is to somehow play with the width of your sample in the perpendicular direction. And the effect of that is that it softens the Coulomb repulsion. And it was argued that it may have some interesting effects for the non-abelian states. So instead of pure Coulomb interaction, you get something which is softened. The problem with this approach is that if this is your sample in the perpendicular direction, you can think of it as a kind of quantum well, right? So then in a quantum well, you typically have, you know, a number of low-like subbands, like symmetric subband, anti-symmetric subband. And what you really want to do is just focus on one of them, right? You don't want to study many of them. But if you increase the width of your sample, you're also bringing these guys down. So then you have to take care of that. And these are very interesting experiments that were recently done in Mansour Scheigen's group, which I will discuss in the last part of this talk. The other aspect of the other possibility to tune the interaction in gallium arsenide systems has been the tilting of the magnetic field. So this is very simple. You just have your sample, which is in some perpendicular magnetic field, and you apply also some component which is parallel to your sample. So this aspect of tuning, which was done a lot by Jim Eisenstein at Caltech, is interesting because then you explicitly introduce anisotropy in your system. But the problem with that is that, again, lambda level mixing becomes very enhanced, and then it's difficult for theoretical modeling of that. So some people have tried to model the effect of this, but the results were not all that convincing. So another aspect of this tunability that we are advertising is to use this new materials where fractional quantum Hall effect was observed, such as graphene-based system, and to explore what can be done with them. So why are these materials more interesting? Well, first of all, just to give you a brief reminder, so the fractional quantum Hall effect in graphene was first observed in 2009 by these two groups. And it's also, I mean, theoretically, it's completely expected to occur in, multi-layer graphene and topological insulators in the magnetic field, of course. But, for reasons of purity of these samples and mobility and so on, it still hasn't been observed in these cases. But in graphene, here we have a picture from Philip Kim where they see a lot of these fractions. And the interesting aspect of the fractional quantum Hall effect in graphene is that it has a higher symmetry, because in addition to electron spin, you also have the valley degeneracy. So these two can combine, and then you can get an interesting zoo of different kinds of states. And in particular, there can be interesting symmetry breaking effects, such as in this experiment from Amir Jacobi's group, where in a particular lambda level in graphene, using compressibility measurements, they see that the particle Hall symmetry is broken. For example, you see that the two-thirds state is strongly present, but one-third state is not there. So this picture actually has not been understood. So this is something that remains as a kind of interesting question. So
the one on the left was like a typical...
This one,
yeah.
That's a lower lambda, like the lowest lambda level of graphene, where the particle Hall symmetry does seem to hold somehow.
Okay, so that's in a higher.
This is then in the higher lambda level where it's broken somehow, but this lambda level in graphene is still not like the higher lambda level in gallium arsenide. This is still like the lowest. The interaction form factor is still like the lowest, right? It's just because of the symmetry degeneracy that it's, you see what I mean?
No, I don't.
So this this figure where I had the higher lambda level in gallium arsenide, the effective interaction projected in this lambda level is very different from the lowest lambda level, because the wave function will have a node in the first excited lambda level, right? So that changes the effective interaction. But in graph, that's not the case with this figure that I showed here.
You see that it differ by this value.
Some breaking of symmetry rather than the form difference in form factor on the interaction, because that's...
So this actually won't be the first lambda level,
just... If you think in terms of the effective interaction, yeah. Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. I'm not really sure what we're thinking about it, but so our work in this direction was basically ask the following question. Let's just take these graphene-like materials and explore the possibilities. What can they teach us about the quantum Hall effect that we didn't have before? And the nice thing about these systems is that they come with an open surface. So the surface is completely exposed, and you can put external probes, you can manipulate them and do whatever you want. In gallium arsenide, this is very hard to do because the 2D electron gas is buried very deep in this semiconductor material. So if you have an open surface, then you can imagine, for example, putting some dielectric on top of that graphene sheet. And when you put this dielectric, you will induce effective screening of the Coulomb interaction in the plane of graphene. So in other words, if I put some dielectric with some dielectric constant, the Coulomb interaction, which used to be just plain 1 over r, now becomes some modified function, which is explicitly written here. So d is the distance of this dielectric from the plane of graphene, and you have the two dielectric constants. So there's a lot of tunability here, as you can see, because you can change, for example, this alpha, which is the ratio of these dielectric constants, or you can also change the d by moving the dielectric. And you can ask the question, what are the consequences for the many-body physics in this case? Well, the many-body physics, the consequences are given here. So we did a numerical calculation of the excitation gap for some interesting states. For example, the one-third state, which is the Laughlin state, and this five-half, the non-abelian state. And we can see that if you tune alpha and d, you can change the excitation gaps of these states by actually a factor of 3 if you are somewhere here. Or you can also reduce, I mean, this means increasing them 3 times. And this actually means that you can even bring them down to 0. So using this dielectric screening, I can tune the transition between a quantum Hall state, an incompressible state, and a compressible state. So this is something that was difficult to do in gallium arsenide in a controlled way. Here we have a lot of control because apparently the experimentalists have become, in graphene community, very good at doing this kind of nanomechanics of putting these dielectrics. Because you see, you have the trick is that you have to put this dielectric very close, right? You have to put it at the order of magnetic length away from the graphene sheet, because that's where you get the interesting physics out of it.
And what is the compressible state at one-third? Is that some another novel charge-less liquid?
No, that's a charge density wave at one-third.
Well, that's a competitor.
Excuse me?
That is a competitor.
Sure,
graphene
state or I don't think there are, in this context, there are no more exotic...
Because if you have a charge density, still there will be a gap.
You mean...
I mean, in the name...
In a finite system or in thermodynamic limits? In a finite system, of course, it will have a gap, but...
I was wondering, when you say that it becomes gapless in some corner, is it going to some other state?
No, I mean, it's just the charge density wave, I would say. For that one, it's more tricky because it can be also like a stripe, which is a particular type of charge density wave.
Because in the lowest Landau level, going to charge density wave is very hard. You go to very low filling, like 1/9.
Yeah, that's if you just work with like Coulomb interaction but change the filling factor. But here we are modifying the interaction. So
you could stabilize.
So that's, I think, pretty interesting that you can just go between these two states and study the phase transition. Studying phase transitions is hard in this context. Okay, then we also did some other exploring some other possibilities of tuning the band structure in these materials. But right now I'm not going to focus very much on this because I mean, you can read about it in these papers. This is just to illustrate you that there is a lot of room for tuning all kinds of things, band structure, dielectric environment of your sample. And this, I believe, is going to be used by experimentalists sometime soon, especially this thing with putting the dielectric, because I believe that Philip Kim is trying to do this, but the quality samples of graphene is still not that high and they have some troubles with
In this 5-half, in your opinion, the Caltech experiment, which claimed to see Majorana fermion and so on, will it fit in this diagram?
I mean, this is a pretty idealized calculation, okay? There are maybe some issues with graphene physics, like disorder and stuff like that, which we don't really understand at this point, because 5-half has not been seen in graphene, okay?
Not one, but in the other system.
In gallium arsenide.
Right, yeah.
I will talk more about that later. I will show some of these experiments. So I'll defer my opinion for a little bit. Now I would like to conclude this part of advertising, you know, all kinds of aspects of tunability in graphene-based systems. And I will go to this specific case of tunability in white quantum wells and look in detail at this 5-half state. That's what I want to do. So let me first remind you why people believe that 5½ is a non-abelian state. So here is some theoretical evidence for this. So first, early studies showed that the ground state in numerical calculations is spin polarized in these systems. This was shown by Morf. And that's good because Moritz state is polarized. Then also, as I said, it's very close to the compressible phases. And finite width of the sample was also shown to be a good stabilizer for this state. Then people have explored the adiabatic connection between the model Hamiltonian, which is for the Moritz state, and the real Hamiltonian, which is Coulomb interaction. So you just superpose these two Hamiltonians, weigh them by some factor, and you study how the ground state changes as you change this lambda from 0 to 1. And these studies have shown that there is this adiabatic connection without closing of the gap, which suggests that the model state is the same as the real state. Then there was some more recent work about the localization of quasi-holes and braiding them. This also suggested that everything's fine with respect to the Moritz state. Then there was interesting work about the collective excitation spectrum. I will come back to that in a few slides. And then there is this work by the Summer group, which is very interesting because that explores the pairing structure of this state. So what they did was studied the ground state energy in exact diagonalization per particle as a function of number of particles, okay? So what do you expect if you have a paired state? Well, if you have a paired state, as soon as I have an odd number of particles, there will have to be a particle which is not paired, right? So the ground state energy should increase for that case. And then if the number is even, it should drop. And that's exactly what they see, this, you know, even odd, it's called even odd effect in this context. On the other hand, in the lowest Landau level, they don't see such an effect, which suggests that the ground state at 1/2 is different from this one. And that's this one is the compressible state that I reminded you in the first slide. So that's the state which is not there. There's no plateau there. But here, there should be. And then there is also some more subtle concepts like this superconducting order parameter, but that's not so important at this point. Now, what do the experiments say? Well, I guess it's fair to say that they haven't really said the last word about this, but these are the two main experimental references. So there are these experiments on quantum Hall non-abelian interferometry by Kang's group and also by Bob Willett's group. And so these types of experiments, it's a simple, really, interferometry experiment. So you take a Fabry-Perot interferometer, but now you have these edge states that you let pass through that interferometer, and you should be detecting a phase slip depending on what kind of quasi-particle you put in that interferometer. And there is an alternation between two different types of phase slips which should occur for the non-abelian statistics. But there are some problems because these experiments require a lot of theoretical interpretations, so not all people are equally satisfied with the conclusions of these experiments. However, they're certainly consistent. They're not ruling out the possibility that this state is non-abelian. However, there is a little glitch in all this story with 5½, and that's actually something that Sun-Sik was involved in. So this is when people realized that if you take this Moritz-Pfaffian state and you particle Hall conjugate it, you actually get a different state. And this state was called anti-Pfaffian. So why is this interesting? It's interesting because these states really represent distinct phases of matter. So while both states are non-abelian in the bulk, anti-Pfaffian really has completely different edge physics from the Pfaffian. And that means that it has a backward propagating edge mode in addition to the one that propagates the usual chiral edge mode that all the Pfaffian has. So how do we really tell which one of these phases is actually realized in experiments? Because it's obvious that only one of them can be realized unless there is some really complicated phase separation, inhomogeneous scenario between them. And the way to settle down this question theoretically is no longer to just project to a single Landau level, but also because if we project, as we heard this morning, the interaction will be particle hole symmetric in a Landau level. So we need to introduce Landau level mixing to break that particle hole symmetry. And this will select one of these two states. But the effects of this Landau level mixing have been tricky to calculate until now. I will show you a little bit about that later. Here are just two experimental facts related to this question. So there was this experiment by the group of Charlie Marcus where they measured the tunneling conductance and tried to fit it to some formula to get the charge of the non-abelian quasiparticles. And they made a fit of this quantity and they found that the anti-Pfaffian was fitting somewhat better. So this would be the best fit. So Pfaffian was not performing as well, let's put it that way. And there was also this experiment by Motti Heiblum group, which measured the edge modes. And they claimed to have detected the counterpropagating edge mode in this state, which would only be consistent with anti-Pfaffian. So experiments are kind of leaning towards the anti-Pfaffian.
The wave function of Pfaffian is very nice. It looks like a BCS wave function.
Right.
Multiplying Laplace. Can you give similar form for anti-Pfaffian?
Well, you cannot write it in such a nice form, yeah.
But then what about quasiparticle? Is it also 1/4 the charge? For Pfaffian, you have E by 4. What about anti-Pfaffian? What is the nature of the quasiparticle in terms of charge?
You should get a different one, but... But these experiments were also hard to do, so they couldn't decisively really distinguish.
Because in the Willett's experiment, the charge was very clear.
Right.
Because 1/4. She was about the interference statistics.
I would rather not go into interpreting these experiments because there has been a lot of. So these experiments that, for example, detect the edge physics. They are somewhat maybe more reliable, but you know that may not be the universal consensus on this. But these experiments certainly suggest that the anti-Pfaffian fits better. Now the question is, how do you as a theoretician, how do you show it, right? How do you convince
yourself? So even though you can't write down a wave function, the idea of pairing is still there.
Sure. They're both non-abelian. They have identical properties in the bulk. So how do you do that? Well, we can use this idea of tunability of interactions. And these people in Mansur Scheigen group actually did something which triggered us to look at this problem. So they studied this white quantum well problem and they tuned the density, okay? So when you tune the density, as I said, you can move around these subbands in the quantum well. So their subbands are labeled by these two numbers, sigma and n. So sigma really means the symmetry of the wave function perpendicular. So the lowest state is a symmetric, then you have anti-symmetric. This is like basic quantum mechanics. And n is just the Landau level index. So each subband will have this subband index and the Landau level index. And this is the experimental result. So when you tune the density in this quantum well, you can induce a crossing between these different subbands. So here is what happens. So this is the chemical potential. So you start from S1 subband. So that's supposed to be where you have the half field, the first Landau level form factor. And then you go to the other subband, which is the lowest Landau level, A0. So it's anti-symmetric in the perpendicular direction, but you also changed the Landau level index, okay? So this sounds like a pretty complicated crossing, but here's the experimental result. So they also measured the gap as a function of this magnetic field, or that you can look at it as a function of the density too. And they see that the gap starts out as, I mean, it's non-zero here, which is fine because that's an incompressible state. But then it undergoes this very interesting increase right before it drops down to zero. So in this region here, it dropped to zero, but somewhere before this crossing, it actually became very robust. So what I want to argue in the remaining part of this talk is how can I use this fact to explain what the ground state is, and can I theoretically reproduce this experimental result? So that's what I'm going to do. And to do that, I will use exact dynamization for the quantum Hall system on the torus. So let me just guide you quickly through this very old results about this, basically from Haldane 85 paper. So to put the quantum Hall system on a torus, you just have to consider the magnetic translation algebra, which for a single electron is given here. So this is not your normal translation operator, because instead of momentum, you have the guiding center momentum, and that's written here. So it has this extra piece, which comes from the gauge. So because of that, you don't get ordinary representations, but you get projective representations of this algebra. And you also have this constraint that the flux has to be quantized through the unit cell. And the interesting aspect of this old paper is that it also identified the symmetry in the many-body case. So in the many-body case, there are these emergent symmetries, emergent translational symmetries. And this paper argued that the whole spectrum can be classified by this momentum K, which lives in some Brillouin zone, which is given by the greatest common divisor of the number of particles and the number of fluxes. So this is a many-body momentum, not a single particle momentum. And the other interesting aspect is that the topological degeneracy is interpreted trivially as the property of the center of mass in this context. So every eigenvalue in the spectrum is at least Q-fold degenerate for the filling factor, which is P over Q, and P over Q are taken to be mutually coprime.
So when you say many-body momentum, it's a center of mass momentum.
The center of mass has been factored out. This is a relative part of the, this is referring to the relative translation, not to the center of mass. Because center of mass part is completely trivial. It just brings you copies of your spectrum.
Then what is the physical interpretation of this many body?
Well, I mean, it classifies the spectrum, so you can resolve the collective modes as a function of this quantum number.
I see. It's a quantum number of excitations.
Yes. Of every state in your spectrum. So if you just do this, okay, you just do this exercise and you put nu equal 5 half, here is the picture that you get. So this is the spectrum, okay? Again, we vary the boundary condition. We can just distort our unit cell. But the spectrum doesn't look good because you see the ground state is moving. It changes from one K to the other as I tune the unit cell, which I don't want to be. And also the excitation spectrum looks somehow completely scrambled. So this, I'm using a wrong Brillouin zone. That's the message here. So how do I correct that? Well, we correct it in the following way. We got the wrong result because we didn't take into account the physics properly. And the physics tells us that the nuclear 5 half state is paired. So we shouldn't really look at it as a 1 half filling. We should rather look at it as 2 over 4 filling, because we always have two electrons together. Okay? So because of this, then you also need to modify your Brillouin zone, because you saw here that this many-body momentum depended on the greatest common divisor of these two guys. So if I change P and Q, I will change this many-body K. So in practice, that means that if this was your original Brillouin zone using the old method, using the new method, you have to fold back onto this smaller Brillouin zone, which we call the quartered Brillouin zone. And what that means is that, for example, this state here, this state here is exactly mapped. So these red points are all mapped to the same. You see, if I fold it, they all come back to this one. And when I replot my previous spectrum, this is what I get. Energy spectrum as a function of momentum, ground state always stays at zero. So it's a liquid state. And I get this beautiful collective mode, actually two of them, which is exactly the manifestation of the non-abelian statistics. Because this mode is the usual bosonic mode of Gerwin-McDonald-Platzmann. That's just a density wave. But there is also this non-abelian mode, which is the neutral fermion mode. And that's the one which is responsible, really, for the non-abelian nature of this state.
So that neutral, what you call as, in the case of one-third quantum Hall effect, you can view it as a vertex-anti-vertex bound state.
No.
Is it similar to that?
Well, at 1/3, we don't. This is a neutral spectrum, and the spectrum at 1/3 does not contain this mode. It only contains this mode, which is the density, you know, Gerwin, McDonald, Platzman, single mode approximation.
So when you say this is a neutral fermion, this is fermionic excitation.
Yes.
Whereas the Gerwin, McDonald, Platzman
bosonic. It's bosonic. Yeah, it's just a density wave, single mode approximation. You act with the projected density operator on your ground state, like Feynman, you know, theory.
So it's a fermionic branch that emerges.
This one, yeah. That's the nice thing about the new thing about the Moritz state that distinguishes.
But then is it related to Bogoliubov quasi particle? Because it's
The unpaired fermion, yeah. And the interesting thing is that you get the same spectrum for both even and odd particle numbers, which is the new feature of this study. And for technical reasons, this was not possible to reproduce if you use other types of boundary conditions. So that's reassuring.
So it's a neutral in there.
There's no charge. There's no charge in either one of those because you didn't change the magnetic flux. You studied the system at the fixed number of fluxes. You didn't introduce any. So this is a pair of defects, quasi-Hall, quasi-particle, which is neutral.
So is there any theoretical prediction of that neutral curve other than the fermionic excitation, is there any prediction like there is for the Gerwin McDonald plasma?
You can construct microscopic wave functions for that mode too, but it's definitely more involved. I can show you later on. We did that too. So the nice aspect of this is that I can go back to this superposed Hamiltonian that I mentioned earlier, and I can study the adiabatic connection. But now I get completely new results, which enable me to study the transition between the compressible and the incompressible state. Previously, this was difficult to do because of various technical reasons. Like if you study on the sphere geometry, these Hamiltonians should be diagonalized at different Hilbert spaces, and you cannot really interpolate between them. But now I can do it. I can do it very nicely, and this is what comes out. So this is the ideal case when I just have the Moritz state. You have these two modes, right? So then I put a little bit of this Coulomb interaction, and I see that this pairing mode is actually going soft.
The
neutral fermion mode is going soft, and you can see it here. It gets distorted, but it just goes soft, and then eventually it hits, you know, zero, and at this point the ground state moves away from zero momentum to some non-zero momentum, and this is a compressible state here. So this is a very interesting transition that should be looked in more detail, but now we have the tools to do that because of this quartered Brillouin zone construction. Okay, and let me now go back to this question of Pfaffian versus anti-Pfaffian. So here is how previously people tried to study this question using lambda level mixing. And in particular, I want to draw your attention to two studies. One is this study on the sphere in the sphere geometry by Voish and Jain using the perturbative interaction derived by Bishara and Nayak. That's the result of that study. So as you can see, this is the overlap of the ground state as a function of the overlap with both of these states, Pfaffian and anti-Pfaffian, as a function of the lambda level mixing. And they saw that the Pfaffian was slightly better. But as you can see, the anti-Pfaffian is also pretty high. So it's, again, not very easy to tell them apart. The other study was done on the torus by Rezai and Simon, which is given here. But it suffers from the same problem because, again, you see that the overlap for the Pfaffian state is pretty large, but so is the overlap for the anti-Pfaffian. So how do we really get rid of these finite size effects? And this is the way. So previously I showed you that both even and odd numbers of particles on the torus yield the same physics. So I'm free to choose both even or odd numbers of particles. And the key is to choose odd, which wasn't been done before. So all of these previous studies, they were about choosing even numbers of particles. So let's choose odd. then we empirically see that the ground state of the projected interaction at 5.5 is an exact doublet of states, okay? And this occurs only in some special cases. For example, in this is the energy spectrum. If you look at these black squares, that's the case when this subband is very high, so I have only this particular subband, and the interaction is particle Hall symmetric, and this state here, the square is exactly twofold degenerate. So now I want to lift this particle Hall symmetry. So I'm going to introduce the mixing with this higher subband. This is exactly what the experiment was doing by tuning the density in the quantum well. So I bring this subband down, and I see that this twofold degenerate state now splits in two different ones. Okay, so that's a good sign. So now the only remaining question is which of the two, Fafian or anti-Fafian, describes the guy which is lying lower. And okay, to tell you the answer, it turns out that it's exactly anti-Fafian, and the reason why we believe it's anti-Fafian is because this is now symmetry. There is a symmetry reason which distinguishes Fafian and anti-Fafian, and we can tell for sure that the anti-Fafian is the one that wins in this particular case. So when we have this doublet that I mentioned before, Fafian and anti-Fafian actually must be orthogonal to each other due to symmetry. And you can formalize this by considering the angular momentum of the two. And you find that for these particular numbers of particles like 3, 5, 9, 11, and so on, the Fafian and anti-Fafian are actually perfectly orthogonal to each other. And that means, so I have my exact ground state, right? And I have two trial states which are completely orthogonal to each other. So if I just calculate the overlap with each one of them with the real ground state, I should be able to tell what the ground state is completely unambiguously, right? So here is actually what happens when you're not in these cases, which are bad for you. So then if you have even number of particles, you still see all this trouble that previous guys saw, that you have significant overlap with both candidates. So that's not good. So I don't want to do that. I want to look at odd case. And when I do the odd case, then I see that the overlap with anti-Fafian, as soon as I break the symmetry, the particle Hall symmetry, the overlap with anti-Fafian is really big, whereas the overlap with Fafian is exactly zero to machine precision. And this fact is protected by discrete symmetry of these two states. In addition to this, I can also look at the gap as a function of this particle Hall symmetry breaking field. So delta SAS is just the relative position of the two subbands, so this separation between them. And you can see if delta SAS is very large, then all the particles sit in one subband, which is S1. And then if I decrease delta, this other subband comes close, and eventually all the particles just shift to that other subband. So this is the experimental, the model for the experiment which studied the crossing between these two subbands. And if I compute the excitation gap of the system, I see exactly what the experiments have shown. So I start from some fairly large gap, but that gap actually gets even larger when I get to the transition region. So what this tells me is that the complex mixing of these two subbands has somehow changed the effective interaction, which through the form factor enhanced this non-abelian state. And yes, so I believe I have almost run out of time.
What are typical values for this delta in like the typical Gallium arsenide system, like, you know, in like a multi-hybrid experiment or something like that?
Well, multi-hybrid experiment is not really in this wide well type system. Their system used this alternative method of fabrication, which is the heterostructure. So that's a little bit different from this. And because they use very narrow samples, their higher subbands are pushed very far up, so they effectively don't have any mixing between them. That's, if you want really the highest mobility of your sample, you actually want it to be narrow. You don't want these higher subbands to kick in. But these types of samples, like quantum wells, even though they don't have the highest mobility, are interesting because you can, as you see, tune the position of these subbands. So you can maybe learn some complementary aspects of the physics in that way. Okay, so let me wrap this up. So the first thing I wanted to deliver to you with this talk is that because the fractional quantum Hall effect is really all about strong interactions, right? So the only way to truly learn about it is to be able to tune these interactions at least to some degree and in some controlled way, because then you can study transitions between different phases. And that this has really, since the early days of quantum Hall effect, this has been always hard to do because, as you know, in gallium arsenide, your electron gas is buried in some complicated sandwich of different semiconductors. And to get to it, you have to do something very invasive, which is then damaging for your system. On the other hand, these new materials based on graphene might be very important from this point of view because their 2D gas is fully exposed. I mean, it's basically on the surface. So you can imagine, you know, putting any kind of external probes. And for example, if you want to really simulate some kind of braiding of quasi-particles, it's quite tricky to do that in gallium arsenide because, I mean, people haven't gotten to that point, but presumably one day somebody will want to really do some kind of real braiding in these systems. And I think from that point of view, graphene should really be much, much better if people can achieve, you know, sufficient mobility, purity, all of these things.
And you can, the claim is you can braid with STM tips.
Excuse me?
With the STM tip.
Yeah, with the STM tip, but I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, theorists, it's easy to think in that way. But actually, even in numerics, if you want to like simulate the effect of STM tip, I don't think we have a really good way of doing that. Because the crudest way would be just to imagine like putting a delta function potential somewhere, and then you like move it around. But there is the question of what will you do with this? Because if you have a complicated state, we know empirically that that this type of potential will not pin your quasi-holes. So for a non-abelian state, you have to do some voodoo magic to cook up some special potential, which then is not very realistic because it's very difficult to implement. Yeah, however, in gallium arsenide, I think in white quantum wells, maybe there is some directions to explore there because these materials we know very well that they support the quantum Hall effect. And recently, as I've shown, it has become possible to tune the effect of mixing between subbands and Landau levels. So maybe there's still something to learn from this. Like, for example, we learned that the anti-Pfaffian is the right one to describe the ground state, not the Pfaffian. Right, at half filling, as I've shown, there are symmetry reasons to think that anti-Pfaffian is the one describing the ground state. And this hopefully settles this couple of years long old discussion about the competition between the two. And I would like to emphasize that the same outcome you also get in other types of samples, like what Evelyn asked, like, for example, these heterostructures give you the identical answer. So there also the anti-Pfaffian wins. In that case, you're not really mixing the subbands, but you're still mixing the Landau levels. So it's the same subband mixing, but the Landau level index changes. And that also breaks particle Hall symmetry and also selects the anti-Pfaffian. And I think a general thing that I wanted to convey to you in this talk is that although we study here topological phases, symmetry, you know, geometrical symmetries can still be useful for us and they can still tell us something if we consider special finite systems that are chosen to exploit these symmetries. Like, for example, to distinguish the Pfaffian and anti-Pfaffian, I chose a very specific type of boundary condition and this showed me a clear way how to distinguish one or the other. And as I showed also, this mixing of subbands can also be used to enhance the excitation gap of some of these states before the transition. And I mean, experimentalists are excited about this. I'm not sure to what extent, you know, it can be used to make the state stable. I mean, it is some kind of increase, but whether that's still superior and sufficient for doing the braiding, for example, that remains to be understood. So thanks for your attention.
Do you have questions?
You showed by change of parameter, the fermionic spectrum becomes soft.
Mm-hmm.
So at the place where it becomes soft, it looks like you are recovering composite Fermi C.
Right.
Is
yes.
that a correct statement?
Sure, sure. Like this is the Fermi C, yeah. But it's a kind of, it's a Fermi C which is adapted to this periodic boundary condition. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a circle,
sure,
but it's
sure.
some hexagon maybe or something.
So you can see Fermi C in that sense.
Sure, yeah.
Second question is, in graphene, you have this additional complication of valley degeneracy.
Right.
So does it lead to some more complex Pfaffian states?
For the Pfaffian...
There's a quantum number you can't avoid, unless there is a valley degeneracy symmetry breaking.
It does lead to new states.
Mm.
In fact, this type of degeneracy, I mean, we have a paper on this for the one-third state.
Mm.
So actually, one-third state in graphene, as we argued in that paper, is not the typical Laughlin state. It's related to it, but it has an unusual excitation. It doesn't have this, the lowest excitation is not this roton mode, but it's like a spin wave of some sort. So this higher symmetry does produce very interesting physics, but the problem is really dealing with it properly, because it becomes harder to study it numerically. You know, your Hilbert space just grows a lot if you start including some internal degrees of freedom.
So please remind me, experimentally,
mm-hmm.
they have seen fractional quantum Hall effect in graphene. Is it
yes.
only one third?
Well, it's mostly... So depends what kind of experiments you're thinking about. If you want, for example, a transport experiment, which is the usual, you know, since the early days, right? This is the Philip Kim group data. So here you can see the fractions. This is a bit old now, but you can see mainly the third states in this particular type. This is actually graphene, which is put on boron nitride substrate. So these first experiments, they actually used so-called suspended graphene. So you etch it in such a way that you have graphene which is basically floating in space. But that's not very, doesn't give you high enough mobility. When you put it on boron nitride, which has a very similar band structure, then it really fits very nicely, and then you get high mobility and you get all these beautiful fractions. Now, Amir Jacobi data is a bit more recent, but this is a local compressibility measurement that he does. And then he can see also other fractions, like, for example, the fifths and the sevenths and the ninths. But these are all odd denominator.
Mm-hmm.
So so far, there is no even denominator, which, I would like, this is something I would really like to see happening. It would be good to maybe model it and see why, I mean, if it doesn't happen, you have to know why it doesn't happen, or otherwise you cannot be satisfied, I think.
More questions?
So I have a question which is similar to what Pascal asked earlier. Yeah, so what are this anti-Fermi, what kind of quasi-particles does it have, or how useful is it for quantum computation, etc.?
Oh, for quantum computation, as I said, in the bulk, they are completely identical. So you just take the Ising theory, CFT, of the Moore-Reed, and you conjugate it, so it will give you the same type. In the bulk, for topological quantum computation purposes, it has the same potential. It does not realize the universal topological, but neither does the Pfaffian. So it's only, for example, the aspects of edge physics, this counter-propagating mode, that distinguishes them. So that's why it has been so tricky to say which one actually occurs. Because the experiments about edge physics are one of the harder ones. And that's actually listed here in my open directions in this context. So the edge physics experiments are very controversial in the sense that there's a lot of discrepancy between theory and experiment. Theory would suggest that edge physics should be completely universal. You know, for a topological state, it should be the same protected as the bulk is protected. But experiments detect all kinds of non-universal behavior, like tunneling, IV exponents changing as you vary the system parameters and so on. So people don't really have a good understanding of what goes on in experiments on this, yeah.
When you change the system size, the amount of size, the shape to get the number of the dispersion of the rotor.
Yes.
Why do you get several? Do you understand how many you get and all that?
Let me just go to the picture. You mean, for example?
There's more than one mode, but it's probably some symmetry relation or something.
Like here?
Yeah.
You mean, why do I get so many of these?
Yeah.
Actually, there should be like three copies of them,
mm-hmm,
around like these points, and then you fold them on. So the additional multiplicities here are just the finite size effects. So in principle, I should get, you know, three degenerate ones which exactly fall on top of each other. And in thermodynamic limit, you know, there are just these two beautiful collective modes, and this one has a minimum around LB, of course. What else, you know, can it have? And that's exactly where it hits in the other. Actually, if I may just add, sorry for bothering you, but I think that another interesting aspect of this collective mode physics is to investigate also this small k behavior. As you see, these modes, they seem to go into the continuum. And this is actually, the question is, what is this excitation here as k goes to zero? And so if you think of this geometrical picture of the fractional quantum Hall effect of coupling, you know, to the curvature, this should be like the analog of a graviton in some sense.
I see, the zero momentum.
The zero momentum. So for this one, this should be the graviton. And for the other one, it's like a supersymmetric partner, so it should be the gravitino in the condensed matter analogy.
Yeah. So the calculation of curve in Macron-Poisson predicts that it depends on like the Laughlin parameters and so on, at least for the Laughlin series, on how it goes to zero.
I think it predicts this, maybe.
The density mode.
Yeah.
Density mode.
The density mode, but the Roton minimum.
The Roton, yeah.
The Roton minimum, because the Gerwin-McDonald-Platzmann, strictly speaking, is not valid for small k. I mean, it's not valid for large k that we know, but it's not supposed to be valid for small k either. Actually, it seems to work pretty well for small k. But it does predict, I mean, this, like this minimum here, the energy.
Why is it not for small k?
Good question. Maybe I made a wrong statement. But anyway, for large k, we know that it's not correct. So, but I don't think, well, I don't think that...
I think the whole point of that paper was really to explore the low k limit, to show that as you send k to zero, this, you know, single mode approximation gap survives.
Well, I'm not exactly sure how they shown that. I know that you can compute. You can compute this, but
you take your mini by Brown state or by the Laughlin multiplied by the density operator and the public energy of that state projected most of all. It's a straightforward. I mean,
well, okay. I mean, that will give you the gap at the minimum, but
zero k. At zero k.
Okay, maybe. I'm not sure, but we can discuss more about that.
Secondly, suppose you have similar picture for one third.
Yes.
Will you still have the graviton mode?
Sure. I mean, the one third
I
showed you in the first slides, because that's how I fell in love with doing these types of calculations. When I showed you for four particles, right?
So is that missed by?
Okay. So this system is maybe it's a little bit too small to really. But if you do larger sizes, you see that this clearly goes here,
So is that, you know, like zero momentum states missed by the plasma, you know, given Mcnaught plasma?
There's a zero momentum state where this hits, and it has angular momentum, which is 2,
so
just like the graviton.
But then there are many states there. There is a continuum of band of states in your picture.
It becomes difficult to track it, but because you see there's because of the finite system, you don't really have access. I mean, if you go to large and larger system, this will shift, but only slightly. So there's this gap here that you cannot.
So this gap in momentum space is artificial.
That's because of the finite size system. Because there's some minimal k that you are able to do in a given finite system.
More questions? Let's find luck.